welcome to a better late than never edition of ARG Presents. I'm your good buddy, your good pal, and the always prompt Amigo Aaron, joined by a man who's always tardy to the party, including today. I give you the Brent.
Yeah, but I finish what I start. Oh, that's the difference between us.
What does that mean?
You know, you're a little... You start it, but don't finish it.
That is not true. I'm a finisher, brother. I'm a finisher. Unlike some of the games we're going to look at this week, because we spun the wheel, we made the deal, and the deal was hot. And the deal is, bam, games that cannot be finished. They're impossible to finish, the Brent. A very interesting category here this week. Games that cannot be finished. Now, I want to, before we get too deep into it, have you ever played a game you're going through and you don't know it can't be finished, and you get to a point in a game where it physically can't be finished?
I don't believe I've ever experienced this.
Yeah.
I mean, not unfinishable games are fairly rare. I mean, there are games that loop, right? And that's not the same kind of thing. Like, for example, you've got Donkey Kong running right now. Technically, that game can't be finished, but it was never meant to be finished. Of course, it glitches out very late in the game and kills you automatically. I don't put that on the same level as what we're looking at this week.
I will tell you, I don't think I've ever played a game through that I couldn't finish. Not because I, just because I didn't, maybe I sucked. But I did play a game one time where I had finished it, but jerkily, in the port I played, they'd added extra levels that I didn't know about. And it was the most frustrating and disturbing thing. And that game was Pitfall 2 for the Atari 8-bit line. I'd never beaten Pitfall 2. And I sat down one day, I'm like, this is the day. And I went all the way through Pitfall 2. I was so excited. I literally was tweeting. I was taking screenshots, the whole nine yards. And then the game picks back up because it added special levels to that version where I instantly sucked and gave up. I was too demoralized to continue.
Yeah, didn't finish it. That sounds like you.
Well, all that said, of course, there's the many times that I've gotten to the kill screen of Donkey Kong, but we'll get into that later.
Oh, yeah, right. Now, no, Aaron, the kill screen isn't when you just run out of lives. It's a different thing.
My mistake. There are, you know, I was surprised when I was doing some research in this topic. There's not a ton of games that can't be finished, but there are some prominent games that can't be beat, including something like Duck Hunt on the NES or Tetris. The arcade version of Dig Dug has a kill screen. So there are some games that just straight up you can't go any further. Do you consider something like a kill screen in the arcade game? I mean, that still counts as an unfinishable game, right? I mean, even if
in my book.
Not in your book?
Not in my book.
No,
I think an unfinishable game is when there is a bug or some kind of roadblock that prevents you from getting to an ending point that was designed by the developer, or an ending point that should be there that's like in other versions.
Yeah.
We've actually, Aaron, reviewed a game that was unfinishable in Gladiator. We did Gladiator for the arcade, which finishable, but the ZX Spectrum version of that game is not.
Really?
So
you know what happens? Does it just
the very last boss is actually unbeatable. You cannot finish him.
You know, as I looked over this list, there was one game that I came to mind that it's sort of a legendarily unfinishable game, which was Impossible Mission for the Atari 7800. There's a glitch in there that won't let you complete all the puzzles you need to beat the game.
Can't access the computer.
That would be particularly infuriating, given the name of the game. I was surprised that there were so many NES games in here. There were, and the thing is, these unfinishable games run the gamut from arcade to handheld. I saw some DS games on the list that were in there as well. I guess it's what happens. I mean, sometimes it's an unlucky break. Sometimes it's a programming deficiency. Sometimes it's to cover up your own ineptitude in game programming.
And those are the worst.
Which we'll get to. Some of the things I discovered this week that I'd never heard of before, it was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles DOS version. I knew about the impossible jump in that game on the NES and some of the other ports, but in the DOS version, apparently it's actually impossible.
Right. Yeah, the jump on the NES version is claimed to be impossible. Of course, it's completable. I've went through that game many times, especially as a kid.
Right.
But in the DOS version, due to how the game runs, the frame rate in it, the jump is actually unmakeable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be incredibly frustrating.
You know, one of the things I noticed from the list that we compiled here, if you're watching along, and some of these, I'm just to mention a few things we came across, or stuff like Akira for the Amiga, Raster for the C64. I was surprised to see that this is something that happens in, like, later machines. Gran Turismo 2
yes.
had problems.
Well, you know, it was unable to be 100%ed, which is a little different, but that's still a problem.
Yeah.
Because, and the story with that is, they had a set of cars that it programmed in to be able to get, but they had problems with them, so they took them out of the game. So the most you could ever get percentage-wise complete, and it shows a completion percentage in your profile, is like 80 or 98.4. So if you didn't know, you'd be sitting there trying to grind away at this game thinking, what have I missed? So really bad. Really bad.
We've had some. It's why we've been talking. We've had some people chime in the chat about games that they were unbeatable, including Pajaka mentions Jet Set Willy on the Spectrum, which I'd heard. That one's one I'd heard. He also mentions Broken Sword on the GBA, which has some game breaking bugs. I will say this: there are games out there that aren't listed, or we're not going to talk about. That are beatable, but they do have areas in them that just make the game reset or glitch out to the point where you can't continue. I don't count those as unfinishable. I just count those as flawed. But there are quite a few of those.
No, if you can't get past it by normal gameplay means, that's broken.
Right, but I'm saying games that, like, will occasionally screw up. But, you know. Just
yeah. If it's an occasional thing, yeah, no, that's different.
Pajaco also mentions a glitch out in Congressman Ferdinand on the Xbox. Picard chimed in with Cannon Fodder 2 has a blocked path to A-level. So, a lot of people have experienced this, either something in this wheelhouse or something directly related to the topic today. So we actually had a pretty robust collection of games to choose from. The Brent, I'm going to let you lead the dance today. I think you've got. It's funny. I will say I think we picked a couple that are fairly infamous, but we hadn't covered before. So that's kind of neat. Let's go ahead and see what you've got for games that cannot be finished.
Yeah, I'm looking at RoboCop for the C64. Now, Aaron, of course, RoboCop, a incredible movie that spawned many sequels and plenty of games to go along with those sequels.
I've never seen the whole movie, if you can believe that. That's one movie. That's another one I need to get around to watching. I've seen tons of clips.
That's something, Aaron.
Yeah, I know.
This was released for the arcade. Which is probably the most famous version, but not the first version. The 8-bits kind of spawned the arcade, which then spawned the 16-bit versions. I'm pretty sure that's how that sequence of events goes. It's very odd. But it comes out in the arcade, the Amiga, the Amstrad, CPC, the Apple II, the Atari ST, the Commodore 64, Game Boy, MS-DOS, MXX, NES, the TRS-80, Aaron, if you can believe it, had
a
version.
Yep.
And the ZX Spectrum. So it's not like they didn't have any time to refine this. And all those games are a little bit different. And of course, it was released on a lot of 16-bit systems, which is more like the arcade game. And some of the 8-bit ones, specifically the MSX, completely different game, different feel and everything.
That's what I haven't
but
played. I'll have to try that one.
The same basic premise is there for all of them. You play as RoboCop, which is a half-man, half-machine police enforcer that is programmed to take care of crime by any means necessary, but his human side and his robot side are kind of in conflict, and you know, he's got the morale of a human, but the ferocity of a machine. So you get to take hold of that character, gunning down bad guys, you know, cleaning up the streets. So when this was coming to the theater, they knew there was going to be a big thing. They knew before it even hit the theaters, this was going to probably make good money. So the video game rights were sold off in abundance. And everyone, when you've got a movie, Aaron, what's the thing you got to do? You got to release with that movie, no matter what, because that's your big push, right? That's how you get your sales. And that's what happened to the C64 version. It started a little late in development, and they they pushed, they pushed, they pushed. They had to get this out the door. And they ran out of time. And there were bugs in the game that they couldn't get fixed. So before we go into all that, let's talk about how the gameplay on this is. This is sort of a mix between a run and gun. Well, I guess it is. It's a run and gun. And you play as RoboCop, and you've got your side piece, your six shooter, your mega gun, going through the streets, literally shooting everything you see, and everything you see is trying to kill you. You have one life in this game. One. Which means once you run out of energy, which is not hard to do, that's it. Game over. Go back to the beginning. Try again. you have basic movements, left and right. The screen scrolls left to right, up and down on some of the levels. And you are tasked basically to get to the end. It has a couple unique screens as well. Like one of the boss fights is there's a gunman with a hostage. So you have to shoot, and it puts you in the viewpoint of RoboCop.
I couldn't get out of his eyes. I couldn't shoot. I couldn't get that. I didn't know what to do. My button didn't do anything on that screen. I let the time run out.
You were shooting. It just has no feedback. You have to gun down the bad guy, that's one of the unique scenes. Another unique scene, and they do that twice. Another unique scene is you're trying to find out who your killer is, because you were killed. That's why you were put into a robot body. And it has a mugshot on one side, which is just a black and white line drawing. And you have to flip through the pieces to put the face together, like his forehead and his eyebrows and his eyes and his nose and his lips and his chin. And you have to basically match what's on the other side. And all of this has a time limit attached to it. So it's all very tight and very difficult. And that was by design. I mean, all the versions of RoboCop are a little bit difficult. The C64 version is off the charts difficult. So you're going through the game. There's no sound effects. But the music on this game, Aaron, off the charts awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's real good. And it also has digitized speech in it, too, which is cool.
It does. It says RoboCop.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
This is one of those games that you probably, if you played during this era, this is one of those songs that you latch onto. The title song is so good. It is. You don't want to start playing the game because the title song is so good. A little story I saw online, Aaron. There was a middle schooler, and he was talking to his music teacher. And his music teacher was like, listen, all these beeps and boops in video games, it's going to kill music. Kids aren't understanding how good music can be, and all that. They're accepting these beeps and boops without, you know, there's no complexity in the music. There's no heart. There's no soul. And it's going to kill music. It's going to end. It's going to, because it's never going to get better. It's going to kill music. So the kid went home, took a tape recorder, started up RoboCop, and recorded the title screen music. And it's like a 4 or 5 minute loop. It's incredible. It's very complex. It's worth playing the game just to hear that. So he recorded this and he took it to his teacher. And he said, listen, I understand what you're saying, but I want you to listen to this. This is from a video game. And the teacher put it in and he played it. And he said, man, this is off the charts. This is poetry. He said it was so good. It changed his opinion on video game music. And the teacher actually started listening to video game music and, it, you know, kind of sharing it with this kid. So RoboCop at least formed one bond, did one bit of good in that one instance. So that's cool. I thought that was a fun little story. But RoboCop the game, you're running, you're gunning, you're always at low health, you're always at low time until you get to stage 4. And then instead of just going left or right, you have to climb stairs, and you have to go up a flight of stairs to get past a wall, and then down a flight of stairs to get past a wall, and then up again. And that's the loop. You have to do it several times, and the stage only gives you 3.5 minutes, I think. which is not enough time, because you're dealing with enemies the whole time, but that is not enough time to physically get to the stage end. Even if you ignored all the enemies, even if you ignored all the damage you were taking, just the act of walking up and down, up and down, up and down, and punching through the walls at the end, you do not have enough time to get to the end of the stage. And they did this on purpose. Because if you cheat, or if you do a glitch, which I'll talk about here in a second, you actually can get to the next stage. It is physically programmed into the game, but it is a glitched out mess. Your sprites, any mobile sprites, are still seeable. But the stage has all these elevators going up and down. You can't see them because the graphics are glitched out. And I mean just random characters glitched out. Not like, oh man, that doesn't look like an elevator. It's done. It's dirt. It's garbage. It's nothing but garbage on the screen. So at that point, it's really, really unbeatable. But it has been beaten. You can actually, on the stage I talked about with the time limit, you can glitch through a wall. It's not intended, but you can glitch through the wall and beat the unbeatable stage. And then it is technically possible to finish the glitch stage. If you have the stage memorized, which you could have never done beforehand, back in the day, because, well, A, you couldn't get to the stage, and B, you never knew what the stage looked like in the beginning. But people have pieced it together over time, using resources from the internet and whatnot. And when you get past that glitch stage, the game is fully playable again. I always thought, when I first heard about this, I always thought that the glitch stage was it. You know, if you went on, the rest of the game's just going to be this glitchy mess, right? That's not the case. Once you get past that glitch stage, it starts to become a regular game again, and you can play it as normal. My question to the developers is, why not just take that glitch stage out? Would it have been that hard?
It may have been.
To skip that stage?
You know, I don't know. I'm not a programmer, so maybe there are reasons why they didn't have that option. Or maybe they were trying to get it at the 11th hour, and they just literally said, we want it right now or you don't get paid. You know, something like that.
It's possible. It's possible. But this does have a happy ending, Aaron. In 2012, this game was picked back up. And with the help of, I can't find his name right off the bat. But they actually went in and fixed RoboCop 64. They fixed the time. They gave you more time on that stage. And then fixed the bug that allowed you to play the game properly. So now you can actually go and download a version of this game that is fully completable, as it's intended, the way it's supposed to be, the way that wasn't offered out by Ocean. But Ocean allowed this to be released unbeatable with no... There's no way you can get your money back. There was no way that you could know that it was broken. They never released any kind of patch, or some of these companies, you know, will recall the game, and if you send the game back in, they'll give you a fixed version. They never did that with RoboCop. They just put it out there knowing it was broke and sold a defective product. Very dirty of them. Very dirty of them. Before I go on to another tidbit, Aaron, what did you think of the playable sections of RoboCop that you were able to play?
You know, I was telling you before the show, I've went around with RoboCop on many systems now. I think we played it on the ZX. We played it on the Amiga. I know we played it on the Coco. We played a bunch of versions of this thing. Of course, the arcade, I've never been any good at it, all right?
Right.
I will say, of all the versions I've put on the home systems, this one actually, of course, the sound is great, the music.
The music, yeah.
And the graphics, when you boot up and it shows kind of a digitized RoboCop, it's like, man, yeah, that looks really cool. And then the play is not bad. The feel of RoboCop, the look of the stage, it looks okay. But it's got problems. the first stage... And by the way, I did not get far, and I'll explain why. The first stage of this game is harder out of the gate. Because it keeps respawning guys, you know. And also, why do they have those staircases there that you can't climb? That drove me nuts. I wanted to go up and down. I couldn't get up and down them. The first stage sucks, but it always does. And then you get to that second stage where you're trying to shoot the guy and not kill the chick. What is that? Again, you can't hear a bullet. You don't see any impact. I just didn't think the joystick was working. I was like, what's going on here? And so I just timed out. I'm like, this sucked. So that's a big old fail right there.
Even the broke part.
That's broke. That's broke.
No, it's not. That's complete. I completed that. That's completely completable.
I got past it because the time ran out and the hostage got killed. You know?
No, so, then you lose.
No. Oh, that would explain why it kicked me back to the main screen. I went back. Yeah. Well, you got to bear with me. So to get anywhere in this game, I had to cheat. I got a gimmick to turn off the timer and stuff, you know, to get through it. So anyway, I went there with the timer off and still couldn't get past it because I still couldn't tell if I was shooting or not. So finally, I just had to skip that level entirely to move on to the different levels. I mean, RoboCop, the game, I mean, take the glitch out of it. It's okay. I would call this average-ish. You know, the music elevates it. The music elevates it, but if you take the glitch out, and I mean, listen, it's crap. Let me start right there. It's a crap game, okay? Because of the gun scene is crap, the glitch is crap. Okay, throw that out. Throw both those out. If both those scenes, if the hostage scenes were not crap, and it didn't reset or didn't glitch up, then you'd have an okay game. I think an okay version of RoboCop. I've played worse. There are some nice touches, but I mean, they made it really tough as well, and it didn't need to be made much tougher than it already was, you know. So yeah, and without cheating, you're totally screwed, and even with cheating, you're probably screwed. So yeah, my assessment, not that good, Al.
Yeah, this is an overly difficult game, and it has some weird controlling quirks. For example, to jump, you have to be shooting. Which is
I'm glad you mentioned that. That was baffling to me. It took me a long time to get anywhere close. And then when you're trying to jump and shoot, it's also hard. You're trying to aim when you're shooting. So yes, that was also tough because sometimes the way they've got the bad guys set up on this, they're almost always above you and shooting downward diagonally. And so you're continuously jumping. And then sometimes they'll put bad guys on windows in front of you, and you sort of have to jump up and then shoot straight. Not easy, you know. So, I forgot about that.
I found the best way to get past the first stage is don't stop moving forward. You continuously hold to the right, shooting continuously, angling up to shoot the guys in the windows when you can. It's the only way I could get to this stage. I could not slow play it. On the hostage thing, I was able to just... You have to spam the fire button continuously. If you hit a hostage, you lose some health, but just continuously spam the fire button and aim, because he moves back and forth on the screen.
I'm baffled by that.
You have to follow him. Because you only get like 30 seconds.
Who thought that was a good idea to not give you any notification? Britt, you're not giving this enough hate. That is stupid. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. Can't you put an explosion or make a noise or anything? Horrible.
I'm not saying it's good, Aaron. It's really bad.
Bury it.
But that's how I got past it. And then you're screwed. I mean, past that, you can't, because every time you lose, you have to start the game completely over. And getting through the first level, I was only at like 50% once I had a strategy to get through it. And then killing the hostage taker was like 10%. So I got fed up with the game real fast. I didn't get to the glitched area, and that's by design. They amped up the difficulty all the way through the game because they didn't want you to question it. They wanted you to think, I'm not good enough at this game to get through it. That was the whole point. And that brings me to why I was a little late this morning, Aaron.
Oh, here we go.
I said to myself, this is really hard in 2023. I can't imagine what kind of struggle this was, you know, back in the 1980s when this first came out. And I said, huh, I wonder what people in the 1980s thought of this game. So I went to old magazine reviews.
Yeah.
And it, I've said it 100 times on this show, and I'm going to say it 101 times. Magazine reviews are crooked. This game, Aaron, the best score it got is an 89%. I read probably 6 or 7 articles that I found in magazines. No one mentions the glitching. No one, people mention the difficulty, but you can tell that some of these people never played the game. They never loaded it up. One guy who still ended up giving it a 77, you could tell he played through the game, right? To the point where he couldn't get past. And he comments about how the difficulty ramps up. And that you can, because he's giving incredible details on the first 4 stages of the game. Talking about strategies to get past it. You know, things he had to do, little tricks he figured out. And then for stages 5 through, I think, 9, which you can't access, he starts talking real vaguely. Because you can tell he's played other versions of RoboCop, but he couldn't get there on the C64 version. So he just kind of tried to fill in the gaps with general statements. No one in this, no one I saw in any of the reviews I looked at said anything about the glitching, said anything about how the game is uncompletable. And the scores, like I said, the lowest, Aaron, gave it a 50%. And the scores go up as high as 89%.
Did anyone mention the hostage section and how bizarre that was?
No, because that's in all the games.
It doesn't make any noise, though. It doesn't do anything.
They don't talk about anything like that. No one does. People mention about how good the music is. They talk about the graphics a lot because those are all things that are, you know, easy to digest for the reader, right? And it's easy to say, oh, yeah, this reviewer said the graphics are good, and the graphics are kind of good. But no one, Aaron, can you believe this? Are you not infuriated by this, that no one mentioned that you can't get through the game?
Here's the thing, all right? A lot of these, yes, there's definitely some, there occasionally is some cash being dealt, all right? But a lot of these people, like, let's say I'm Aaron the review guy, all right? I've got to do 5 reviews for the next issue of Aaron Gaming Monthly, okay? I don't have time, or I don't have the skill or the inclination to sit here and beat my head against the wall on this super hard game. You're gonna turn it on, you're going to play through the as many levels as you can, and you're going to base your findings on that. Getting to level 4 is, I mean, you can forget it. The way this was actually quite cutting of Ocean and the programmer to make that level really hard, because you got to think, again, there's no internet, there's no buzz or word of mouth until you get to the playground, until the game has been bought, that there's a place you can't get past. I don't know how long it took after this game was released before that to become common knowledge, but it could have been like a decade. You know, and by that time,
oh, it almost certainly was.
So you got to think about it. It's a cutting move. It's a surprise that more programming publishers didn't do this. All they care about is getting. I mean, if you look at the screenshots of this, it looks great. Big RoboCop, cool music. You know, you load it up, you're like, hey, this looks pretty good. You don't realize that it inside of it's a ticking time bomb. You know, and so you can see why they would do it. You know,
it kills me, Aaron. It kills me. I was a huge magazine reader back in the day. Huge. Because you had no internet.
At the pictures, right?
It was, you know, it was one of those things. That's how you knew what was coming up. You could be the cool kid on the block if you knew about a game coming out before everyone else did because you read it in a magazine. Right? And to think back that these magazine reviewers, and I'm not going to say all, I see how actually prevalent it was, would recommend a game that is half finished is infuriating to me. I can't express into words how angry that makes me. The whole point is to put trust that they're going to do their homework, that they're going to do their due diligence, and they're going to release a review that is fair and objective and complete. And not a single magazine did it. And it ticks me off to no end. It makes me so angry.
It shouldn't surprise you, is the thing. It is what it is.
No.
What are you yelling at me? It was 30 years ago. I'm sorry. They were crooked. Magazines are crooked. You had every issue of EGM, and they were crooked. You knew it.
No, back in the day, I didn't. That's just what infuriates me. So yeah, the game is broken, and Ocean has a lot to answer for. Well, they did. Obviously, not so much now.
Are you kidding me? This is the tip of the iceberg.
I know. Ocean were scumbags. But those magazines reviewers, man, they are the villain that I didn't expect. And it ticks me off a lot. Well, what did Discord have to say about this one?
We did get some action this week in the old Discord. Pajaco chimes in, RoboCroc! I already knew about this version, and because of that, I'd purposely steered clear of it until now. So you drove him to it, the Brent. I'll get the main point out of the way. The game was released in an unfinished state and tried to hide it. The developers deliberately made the game very hard to reduce your chance of seeing most of the bugs. I played for about 45 minutes and couldn't complete the first level. I got close, but not close, and one time I survived long enough for the time to run out. Grr. He even writes that in. Grr. Bullet collision is quite loose, so even being strategic won't help all the time. With cheats, unlimited energy, and limited time, I initially couldn't complete stage 2 because unless you know you have enough to punch through a wall to get to the end, you're screwed, which is true. You have to beat through 2 walls at the end.
Yeah.
But with all this, the game could have been pretty good if given more time. It had great graphics and sound, and it controls well, jump shooting aside. The lack of respect that Ocean had for its customers really shows through here. I would have been livid if I'd paid for this back in the day. However, as has probably been alluded to, there is a bug-fixed version. It is still a tough cookie, but at least now it's completable, but only if you are actually RoboCop. Play the bug fix version for something close to what this game should have been and stay away from the original version. I'm giving Ocean 10 out of 10 and not scoring
no,
the game
Aaron.
Because I wasn't ready.
Not 10 out of 10.
Oh, minus 10. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. I was baffled. Why did you give him 10 out of 10? So there you go. RoboCop. Pajaco was not down with the clown on the cop right there. And in my assessment, it's trash. It's total trash, the Brent. Any parting thoughts on RoboCop?
No, I think I've said my piece.
Yeah, I think you did. I think you did,
oh,
too.
Oh, if you do want to buy this, you can get a boxed version for $28.
Yeah,
you can get loose versions for under a fiver.
That's not bad. Well, I went in a different direction here. It's funny, I instantly knew what I was going to pick, just because I wanted to get something in from this system, too. And so I went with Mindstorm on the Vectrex. So, Mindstorm, first of all, the Vectrex, the fun, quirky, vector-based system, home system, that is all the rage with the kids now. These things have went up in price like a rocket ship, brother. Exponentially gotten expensive, more expensive as the years roll on. It's funny, back in the day, they were actually quite reasonable and were a fun alternative to your Ataris or your Colecos because they came with their own monitor. So a kid could not bother their parents for a TV time. They also, if you've ever seen a Vectrex, it's a little black TV. It's a vertical TV with basically the ability to have overlays inserted. So it actually sort of looks like a little arcade machine. And it came with a 4-button joystick, and you could add another. And it had a few other peripherals. So when you turn on the Vectrex, GCE was kind enough to include a game built into the machine, and the game was, in fact, Mindstorm, the game we're talking about today. Mindstorm, developed by John Hall, which is funny. I had a good buddy named John Hall back in the day.
Now,
John Hall, I want to get into John real quick, because he actually provided a little background to his career. I found an old website that he or a blog he'd authored, a very brief one. he mentioned that he was hired, initially he was hired by an outfit called Western Technologies to be a member of a breaker team. The breaker team included himself, Mark Indictor, and Paul Allen Newell, and they had the task of reverse engineering the Atari 2600. So they were going to do the old gimmick where they were going to reverse engineer the Atari 2600 and then create games for it, sort of like a, you know, sort of like other people had done at the time, and sort of like something like Atari would do later on to the NES. So it's funny that Atari was the victim and a perpetrator of the same crime. So they started working on doing that. They actually put out a couple games. He's credited. It's funny. John Hall's credited with a game called Towering Inferno, all over the place on the internet. But if you read this blog, he clearly states that Paul Allen Newell did Towering Inferno, and he did a game called Mutually Assured Destruction, MAD, USA versus USSR, which I have a vague recollection of. Anyway, eventually, their outfit was picked up by Consumer Electronics, GCE, and they shifted their focus to the Vectrex, and so he got put on the team, and he did. He ended up doing Mindstorm, and his buddy Paul did Scramble, and then Mark, the other guy in the breaker team, did Star Trek. So these three guys, they got hooked up to do Atari stuff, ultimately ended up doing three pretty big games on the Vectrex. He also, get this, Brent, he's not credited for this stuff either. I couldn't figure out. He did Fortress of Narzod on the Vectrex, which is a really interesting game. It's a pretty advanced game for the Vectrex. He also did a game called Dark Tower, which was never released. So he went around with the Vectrex. So getting back to Mindstorm, this thing, of course, was released with the Vectrex in November of 82, 1-2 player hot seat. And when you look at this game, you're not going to be terribly surprised at what it is or what they're trying to accomplish here. Of course, this is a vector-based system. And if you think about the all-time great vector games of the day, there are a few that pop up, but I would argue that probably the most famous or maybe the most successful outside of, say, a Star Wars would be Asteroids, which is a huge, huge, huge hit for Atari. I mean, it really consolidated them and put them on the map as an arcade powerhouse. I remember playing Asteroids at our local Murphy's department store, and when I wasn't playing it, I was just sitting there ogling it, like longingly touching it, as a little kid would do, because I was just like, man, the vectors on this were mind-blowing. And yeah, so to send the Vectrex off, and maybe this is like almost like a proof of concept so people could see what you could do with a home vector-based system, he produced Mindstorm. Mindstorm is very similar to Asteroids, but it does have some key differences. It's a little more advanced. You control a ship, and your controls are based on the joystick and your four buttons. You've got a button for thrust, a button for fire, a button for hyperspace. Hyperspace is sort of a teleport you around the screen type of affair. The game starts off with a mind-laying spaceship that flies downwardly across the screen, and it throws out these little dots. These are mines. And these are actually kind of neat because if you pay attention, these are where ultimately your various mines that you shoot are going to spawn from. And so your ship starts in the middle of the screen, and you can rotate your ship around, or you could actually use the thrust. If you've played Asteroids, you'll recall in Asteroids that when you thrust it, you really floated around for a while. I will say, Mindstorm, this thing has better brakes or whatever than the Asteroid ship, because when you tap the thrust, you don't careen out of control as far as you did in the arcade version, which is good, because you need that extra control, because the Asteroids and Asteroids got nothing on these mines. It starts out simple enough. You just shoot these sort of triangular mines, and when I say mine, think of like a geometric, like almost like a triangle. And then eventually you'll come across some that are different shapes. They're shaped like squares, even crosses. And these are how you differentiate the mines that you're going to run into. Also, occasionally you'll be confronted with the mine layer itself. The ship will kind of fly across the screen. If you ever played Asteroids in the arcade, occasionally a UFO would fly out, and it would just sort of meander across the screen, randomly shooting. In this game, I found pretty quickly that the mind laying ship, is fast. It doesn't screw around. And I found that it generally heads straight across the middle of the screen or up and down across the middle of the screen. And if you're in its way, you're boned. And it comes out so quick, you really don't have any chance to retaliate. So you sort of have to anticipate when it's going to come out to have any effect on not getting killed or just get out of its way. Or if you're quick enough with the hyperspace button, you can hit that. But the hyperspace button has its own problems. Much like an asteroid, you can hit it and you randomly appear somewhere on the screen, and that random place could be right beside a mine and it could kill you. So the obvious thing there. As a pack-in game, I've got to say, I think this is probably one of the great pack-in games. I mean, this thing plays a mean game for asteroids. As you move into the different levels of Mindstorm, the asteroids, like I said, you're confronted with different sorts of asteroids, and they act differently. For starters, go ahead, Brent. What do you have?
They're not asteroids. They're mines.
Right, they're mines, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So you've got like your normal mine. It's just like a triangle. Then you've got these mines that like look sort of like squares, and when you hit a mine, it's sort of unlike asteroids where they split off. This sort of spawns other mines. It doesn't even have to necessarily be near where you shot the thing. Sometimes they just come out. Normally, the normal triangular mines, they just sort of, once you shoot them, they split out into smaller mines, and they come out, and they just kind of float around. But as you get to the square ones, they'll actually start hunting you down. And then on the third level, you get another type of mine that are real nasty. They are real fast, almost like missiles that'll come at you. So it's a difficult thing to do. Once you shoot these, you've got to be ready to start shooting quick and start dodging. There are four different types of mines. We mentioned the floating mine. There's the fireball mine, the magnetic mine, and the magnetic fireball mine. There you go. And, of course, you've also got your mine layer. Then you've got other things that could come up, but only in certain other versions, which I'm not going to get into. So this all sounds great. It's all point-based. I found the controls tight. Before we get into the glitching of this, Brent, your assessment of Mindstorm.
Yeah, this is obviously inspired by Asteroids.
Yeah.
And it does well. I don't think it separates itself enough from Asteroids, but it at least did something. It tried some new things. The heat-seeking mines are almost unfair.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're quick, you can get away from them, but you have to really sit down and grind to get good, to get a sensible idea of the controls and how far you can press one way to line up to where you need to get. As a high score game, I think it's pretty good. I think games probably last a little long for most people for a high score game, but it's fun. It's a good time. I can't imagine being good at this game. I can't imagine taking the time.
Yeah, well, it would take you a little while. I will say, as I played it, I got better at it. You know, I played it more this week than I probably ever played it, and I actually got okay at it. I felt like I was making progress, because there was a time where I couldn't get past the second level, so I could get up. I could routinely get up to the fifth level or so. But there were sometimes I would get killed on the third level easily. The third level, the difficulty cranks up exponentially.
There is a difficulty there that isn't unfair. It's just taking the time to get good at it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. So let's talk about why this is on the list here. So there are three versions of this game. And the U.S. release version, again, keep in mind, these are built into the console. In the U.S. release, the original U.S. release had a bug at level 13 where the game would crash if the player finished the level, okay? And I found out that eventually they actually printed a sheet into some of these machines that they knew had the bug that would advise players to press the reset button if their vectors went blank after level 13. So effectively, they were just telling you, once you hit level 13, just to hit reset. You're done.
Yeah.
So it's funny, because when John Hall made this game, he didn't think much about the level 13 glitch, because he thought no one would get past it. So Jay Smith, the father of the Vectrix, the program, they knew about this. And he said he knew he was in trouble when his son asked him what was going on at level 13. He was like, uh-oh. So his son was able to get take in mind, this is the son of the father of the Vectrix who could get to level 13 and said, hey, Dad, what's going on here? And he was like, whoops. So they knew they had hit the wall here. And so what they had to do was, for people that would call up and complain, they would give them or send them a Mindstorm 2 cartridge. All right? Mindstorm 2 is the rarest cartridge on a system full of rarity. Now, the Vectrix has some real rare items for it. And Mindstorm 2, and we knew this, like, a long ago, Brent got me a Vectrix for my birthday. And even back when I first originally looked into this machine, this was well known that this game was taught hard to get because you could only get it for writing in. So I'm not sure how many of these exist, but there can't be too many that have of the Mindstorm Tombs. Now, even the Mindstorm Tombs, even Mindstorm 2 had some wackiness in it as well. It's funny, when this thing glitches out, every time you clear a level, there's a little, like, cutscene, I guess you'd call it, Brent, where your ship sort of goes in the middle of the screen and, like, goes into warp or something.
Yeah.
It's not a particularly stirring effect, frankly. They don't even shoot stars all over the screen. It's just in that one little area where your ship's at. And then that Minesweeper comes out. And I guess this is where the glitch is happening. But there are even some glitches in Mindstorm 2 as well that do some wacky stuff. We ever cover Mindstorm 2. But that's how you would get Mindstorm 2, would be calling. You'd have to get down there and get into having them send you this. I wonder if that would ever happen today. I mean, can you imagine that? It's hard to believe that companies would just send you a free cartridge if you got annoyed because they dropped the ball in this. I can't imagine anyone getting to level 13. I'd like to meet that kid because, I mean, that would be super duper tough. But if you did get past it, you could keep on rolling. I believe you could go. It had like 90 levels, something like that. There have been a lot of fan spinoffs and remakes of Mindstorm over the years. A lot of people don't know this, but the Vectrix has a very healthy homebrew scene. I mean, it's one of the best. They've done stuff you never would have thought of back in the day with the Vectrix. And so Mindstorm has a lot of interesting updates and changes. There's a Mindstorm 3 you can get, for example. Pretty interesting stuff. I looked over. I was wondering, like, if this was ever picked up, sort of like you were. I couldn't find any magazine articles that even talked about Mindstorm from back in the day. I did find some more recent reviews. IGN gave this 75. Excuse me. Oldies Rising gave it an 80. All Gamers Guide gave it an 80. So this gets between 80s and 90s generally. I think that's a pretty fair assessment of the game?
This is a toughie because you can't excuse them for releasing something they know is broken. They knew at level 13 the game was going to break.
Yeah.
But they also gave it to you for free.
Yeah.
So and you get a little bit of a pass
if you asked.
And they replaced it for free if you did notice it and complain.
Yeah.
But just have the game end at 12.
Well,
you know,
worked back then. You know,
it should be.
No, it's not.
It should. I mean, in the modern day, you have companies releasing games that are literally just download codes because they couldn't get a game finished in time.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with publishers saying, listen, this has to get out the door. And I guarantee that's what happened here. Was the system was ready to go, you know. They weren't going to wait for you to fix your game. They weren't going to wait for to hold up a complete launch because you couldn't get Mindstorm to get past level 13.
Yeah.
But it still bothers me. I'm not going to let them off the hook. For me, like you said, I'm never going to experience that glitch. RoboCop, I could actually see getting good enough to get to the point of failure and being really angry when I found out.
Yeah.
This is a little bit different. It was a free game. It was a pack-in. It was a good pack-in. But they still knew about it, so I'm not going to let them completely off the hook. The game itself, I think it's a fun game. not really my cup of tea. I like Asteroids, but I'm not going to, you know, dedicate an evening to it. It's something I play for, you know, 20, 30 minutes and I'm done. And Mindstorm's the exact same way. It's impressive on the Vectrex because of what the Vectrex is.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to sit down and play, you know, 4 hours of this game to get better at it. I enjoy the skill level I have at it.
I played a lot of Mindstorm this week. It's not why I played a ton, but man, I've got a new appreciation for it. You know, the Vectrex did something no other system back in the early 80s could do. And they could literally bring you almost an exact replica of an arcade experience. The vector graphics gave you, like, exact arcade experience. I mean, it was vector. And this is a game that is beautiful in some ways. I mean, it's a basic game, but it's not. It's a ripoff game, but it's not. It's a very difficult game. It's got a real steep learning curve when those asteroids come out that are square or look like shuriken. They're real nasty ones that have the heat-seeking stuff. I mean, it gets a lot more difficult than Asteroids very quickly. But it's definitely a deeper, more enjoyable game than Asteroids. And so I really dug it. We got a few reviews here, the Brent. Pajaco chimes in. I love the Vectrex, and while I imagine Mindstorm was different enough to Asteroids to avoid a lawsuit from Atari, it's different enough for me to not quite get on with it, even though I do like it. In Mindstorm, your ship comes to an abrupt halt, where in Asteroids, I'm used to the realistic ship physics, and I use that to my advantage here. And I think I was trying to play this like Asteroids when I really shouldn't, and you can. He's right there. Everything explodes with massive explosions that make it difficult to see stuff hurtling down towards you. The game also gets frantic by level 3 with many different types of enemies who all want you dead, and with smaller enemies honing in on you quickly, shooting stuff up close can be a disadvantage, so you really have to pick your shots carefully. That's also true. It's more strategic. I agree. I've still not reached level 13 and seen the crash, so I could play this for a while and be okay, but having to watch that darn cutscene every time you die between each level and at the start of the game lets this game down. It does get kind of irritating. Graphics are good with lots of different enemies represented well for a vector system, and the sound is great. And yeah, despite my complaints, it really does play well. If you're lucky enough to own a Vectrex and only have this, you won't be bored. 8 out of 10. Mr. Dave chimed in. This is interesting, Brent. Mindstorm, the first game to greet you on your Vectrex, and why not? It's based on the most famous vector game. Gameplay, sound control, challenge, all great. There's a bonus here for 6809 programmers who want to program on the Vectrex. As this game resides in ROM, we can use the game's subroutines, i.e. explosions and sound effects, in our own programs. I have had my Vectrex for only a few years now and play a lot of games, but this game is still enjoyable. 9 out of 10. Very interesting man. So I like that Dave chimed in, because, of course, Dave's the programmer. This is a winner to me. I enjoyed it, and despite the glitch, I'll never get to that level, I don't think, so it's not a not a problem. What do you think, Rick? Should we come back to this one sometime in the future? Do you think there's enough meat on the bone here to go another round on this one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can definitely see putting this on the wheel again.
You know, speaking of going around on the wheel, bam, let's do it. I have seated the wheel up here, the Brent. I've seated up real good. So this week's new addition, I added, let me find it here, the new Brain by Gundy, the new Brain by Gundy, as our new piece and our Retro Rewind piece, the Sega CD. Let's go back to the Sega CD. Are you ready, the Brent?
Let's do it.
Here we go. And the winner is, you're not going to believe it, Britt, it's the new Brain by Grundy. Grundy. That's Grundy. Andy Fitzpatrick, the new Brain by Grundy. Do we know anything about the new Brain by Grundy, Brent?
Nope.
I don't know anything about it either, but I guess we're going to learn something, man. That's for sure. Hey, as we're closing the show down here, just a couple quick notes. Starting up next week on Saturday, as we record this, it's going to be the International Computer Club. That's going to be taking place Saturday, September 2nd. at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be big funs, big laughs, where we get a bunch of people from all over the world together to have presentations about classic gaming and computers. If you're a member of the Amigo Search Gaming Discord, you can just meet up with us there. We're going to do it through Discord. And if you're interested in signing up, I'm going to keep the sign-ups open until this Wednesday at 11 p.m. I'm going to shut them down, Brent. So you still got time as we record this. This will debut on Wednesday, so you start until 11 o'clock if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to the podcast. International Computer Club, Brent, I noticed that you're not on the sign-up sheet, my friend. What's happened? Should I put you in?
You know, Aaron, I am busy putting together the soft relaunch of ARG Presents, which will be our next show, everything coming together as it should.
I hope the internet's better for that than it's been for your basement chat today. Someone at one point mentioned that you, in fact, sounded just like RoboCop. It was quite amazing. You know, so, but yeah.
Don't move, dirtbag.
We put some work in yesterday on getting things fixed up. Right now, it looks like a bomb went off, like one of those asteroids honed in on the heat seeker, blew up some pinball machines. But we're working on it, work in progress, and hopefully we'll get it kicked up. But yeah, starting next... I guess next Sunday, a week from today, as we record this, which will be the third, ARG, it'll sort of be entering a new era. I mean, it technically won't feel like that.
Absolutely.
We'll be doing an ARG, but the week after that, it's going to be an R. Sinclair, and we're going to get into it. So as we slowly transition over, I'm looking forward to it. The Brent should be a lot of fun to get into some of these other systems. Like I said, we're lucky that you have so much experience playing all these other machines because of this show. Otherwise, it'd be a real problem. So we got lucky on that one.
And I think it's going to be a fun transition. We're going to try to be doing a few additional things. Give Patreon supporters, who we love very dearly, extra added bonuses. I'm hoping that we can get around to adding stuff to the Patreon page when we get those. We're going to redo those and launch those about the same time. It might be a little bit later. It might be launching them as their show comes into the rotation. But yeah, exciting times. I'm looking forward to all of it.
It should be a lot of fun, and hopefully everybody will join us for the ride. Thanks everybody for tuning in this week. Unlike all these other games, we're finished, brother. We'll see you next week. Adios.